Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Recently, my wife and I decided to spend a couple of days in the Alsace and Black Forest regions in neighboring France and Germany, north of Basel, the Swiss city on the Rhine. Crossing the unguarded border from Basel into France, you immediately feel that you're in another country. It's not just the language and the distinctly French ambiance that's different. The most striking thing to me is that once you're out of urban Switzerland, you're suddenly confronted with wide open spaces and less population. Being largely mountainous, much of Switzerland is uninhabitable, which makes this one of the most densely populated countries in Europe. Even out here in the rural Emmental, it's becoming more and more difficult to be alone in nature for very long before you meet someone else walking in the woods. Basically, the only sparsely populated parts of the country are the Jura region in the west and the canton of Graubünden in the southeast. Driving through the Black Forest in Germany on the way to Lake Constance, which borders on Switzerland, you also go through some large expanses of rural countryside. But once you cross over to the Swiss side at Kreuzlingen, it suddenly gets crowded again, and worse as you near Zurich. One thing to be avoided at all cost is transiting through the city of Zurich during the evening rush hour. How many times have I listened to traffic bulletins on the radio with the same announcements of traffic jams at this tunnel or that interchange? This goes on day after day, and they might as well just record it and play it every evening. Unfortunately, because of a wrong turn caused by a confusing road sign, I was unable to avoid being channeled into the heart of Zurich. It was a nightmare, believe me. After an hour of stop-and-go traffic, we made it to the south of the city on the highway to Bern, and thought it would be easier going from there on. But suddenly, we saw a line of stationary cars in front of us for as far as the eye could see. As I found out later, there had been an accident somewhere down the highway, and this traffic jam went on for 10 kilometers. Fortunately, I was just able to get off the highway at the last minute. I headed for the old Route 1, which used to be the main road between Zurich and Bern before the Autobahn was finished in the late 60s. This way, we could bypass the traffic jam and rejoin the highway farther down the road. Or so I thought. It had been decades since I'd been on the old road, and what I saw that night nearly traumatized me. One shopping center after the other, and endless filling stations, roadside supermarkets, and eateries. The old Swiss Route 1, which used to pass through some beautiful rural countryside, had become a suburban Zurich shopping road, featuring endless traffic lights and stop-and-start driving. One of the things that struck me the most was the excessive illumination of the shopping malls, which had already closed for the day, but the lights stayed on as if in tribute to these temples of consumption, Las Vegas style. And here we are, wringing our hands about rising electrical consumption and the need for more nuclear power to accommodate it. Perhaps it would be more sensible to simply switch the lights off for the night. After a much longer trip than expected, we finally made it home to the Emmental, with its dark country roads. What a blessed and welcome sight. Yes, by comparison to the Zurich metropolis, this is really simple rural living, and I love it. I grew up near a big city, but I'll take country living any time. But hardly a day goes by without news of the booming Swiss construction industry and the steady loss of more and more green spaces. When will it end? I don't know. But in a country which seems obsessed with industrial growth and profit figures, it may well be that the building boom will only stop when there is literally nothing left to build on. Even the traditional mountain resorts have been affected by this growing cancer. I sincerely hope that somebody wakes up to this menace before it's too late, and more importantly, actually does something about it. If this doesn't happen, I hate to think of the Switzerland my grandchildren are going to inherit. In addition to the newly produced material offered on the website and here on PCJ Media, we also feature some old vintage reports and features from the pre-Switzerland in Sound days. The information they contain may no longer be valid or up to date, but we present this material as a sound document for your listening pleasure. Here is one of those vintage items.
Right now, less than 100 people are registered as residents of this village of Indamany, characterized by its stone and slate roofs, many, many years old. I have a special guide. He's Adolf Schalk. Al Schalk is an American journalist and writer who has lived in this village for many years and has actually written a history of the village. Al, we're standing right now on a narrow pathway, which at least at this part of town, the north side of town, is paved with stones mixed with ordinary dirt. And this has a great historical significance for this tiny village.
Yes, for many centuries, this little path was the only connection with the outside world. The people had to walk on foot for about 7 hours one way, to reach the bottom part of the valley on the opposite side of the mountains here to Lago Maggiore.
Now, to give us some geographical definition, Indamany is right in the mountains, situated in a rather deep valley, almost equidistant between Locarno on the one side and Lugano on the other, roughly speaking. And I can imagine in years gone by, this place must have been terribly isolated.
It was. Because the road to Indamany, the automobile road, was only built at the end of World War I, around 1917.
And this road coming up is really an adventure. It has a tremendous number of curves. I think you've counted them.
Well, there are about 250 curves, including a great many hairpin curves.
People didn't tend to do a lot of traveling here.
No, they didn't do a lot of traveling, but nevertheless, the postman went down to the village to collect the mail and bring it up here about three or four times a week.
Well, let's walk gratefully down the path rather than up it, Al. How old is Indamany? How old are the oldest records?
The oldest records go back to the 13th century, but it is believed that it is certainly several centuries older. The first settlers were presumably shepherds and perhaps hunters. And much later, there are legends that bandits who used to rob people on the main thoroughfares down in the valley used to come here and hide.
It would seem like a good hideout because it's highly unlikely that many people would be caught or found up here.
That's right. In fact, there is reason to believe that some people came here to escape military duty, because in former times, the peasants had to serve in the armies of the many princes who were constantly at war.
Ciao, Tama.
Yeah, ciao.
Morgen.
Yeah.
A moment ago, we greeted some people in Swiss German. And that leads us to one of the unusual aspects of the modern story of Indamany, Al. Half of the modern population of Indamany is German-Swiss. They weren't born here. They came here. What's the story? What's the reason?
Well, these are the so-called city dropouts or city refugees. Most of them are young people, but also a few older people who came here to seek alternative lifestyles.
We are thinking it is a good place for our children for learning the living, and because there are no cars, and they can live more in the nature.
Al and I have dropped in on Hannes and Andrea Weilenmann, and they're a German-Swiss couple who have lived up here for just under 2 years. Do the children enjoy it up here, do you think?
When I see the other children in the town, I must say yes.
We've come across walking through one of the few paths in the village here, and a herd of goats. Very picturesque, but I'm sure they weren't put here by Walt Disney. Al, what are these goats doing here?
Well, the young people from the cities, the city refugees who have come to settle here, are now raising goats, whereas the farmer indigenous population, which is unfortunately dying out, no longer raise goats, but they're more interested in tourism.
So it's the alternatives, then, the social dropouts who've come back here to keep it going.
To keep it going and to live the life the people here formerly lived.
Are they successful at it?
To a large extent, yes. Ticinese no longer make goat cheese to the same extent as they did formerly. And so the older Ticinese are delighted, the young people are now making goat cheese.
I just realized I was turning around and looking here, we're at the very edge of the town. I mean, it literally is the edge of the, not only the town limits of Endemoni, but also the Swiss frontier with Italy.
Exactly.
We can see the customs house right here.
That's already Italy.
It doesn't look logical to me. Is there any good reason?
Yes, there is. In 1515, the Confederates were more expansionist-minded than they were today, and they had many battles and conquered a lot of territory south of here, all the way down to Domodossola.
That's in Italy.
Yes. They're mainly fighting the French. They lost the battle at Marignano near Milano, and because of this defeat, they had to give up a vast area, either here, this valley, or in the area near Mendrisio. And then they had the choice, and they said, well, Mendrisio has a lot of vineyards. However, here, there are a lot of chestnut trees. Well, we have enough chestnut trees, but we don't have enough vineyards, so let's give up this area, and let's keep the area with the vineyards. And then the people from Endemoni says, oh no, we have the right to stay here within the Swiss Confederacy because there are documents to prove that we belong to the Diocese of Locarno. And this protest by the people of Endemoni was accepted, and so for that reason the border was drawn illogically across this area here.
European history can be very quaint indeed.
Yes. Passeggio senza documenti.
Grazie, buongiorno. We just asked if we could pass for a moment and go walk into no man's land. In fact, it's a strange border crossing here, Al. We are standing directly on the frontier between Italy and Switzerland. There's only a plaque here on the road saying that you're on one side or the other, but the customs posts are actually a couple of hundred meters on either side. In the past, Al, there must have been a lot of smuggling going on here in the days when it was really worthwhile.
Well, the people of Endemoni mostly smuggled between during the two world wars, when the men were not able to go out as guest workers, because for centuries the living here was so hard that the men had to go out as guest workers to earn a living, and sometimes they were away as long as 10 months in a year.
What did they smuggle mostly?
They smuggled mostly cigarettes and liquors, and in fact, when there was a shortage, rice.
And the border crossing is not 24 hours here. You better be, if you go over on the other side, you better be back by 9 o'clock in the evening.
9 o'clock in the evening or after 7 o'clock in the morning.
Al, let's take two or three steps over the imaginary line separating two countries back into Switzerland.
Okay, we've been abroad. Let's go back to Switzerland.
We have a little bit of a snowfall. We're recording this in the month of November. And yesterday when I came up, it was very warm, sunny, very mild, southern climate, Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. Now things have changed and we have some snow flurries.
The real snowfall doesn't really start until the middle of January.
Does it really get cold up here in the winter?
It sometimes does, but on the other hand, that again is unpredictable.
The car that just went by has license plates from Varese. That's the province on the Italian side. There seems to be a lot of cross-border traffic here, certainly from the Italian side to the Swiss.
That's true. That's because the gasoline is cheaper in Switzerland than in Italy.
And they come over and just fill up.
Yeah.
Well, Why did you come to Endymion?
Well, I guess I'm a dropout myself. I'm a journalist by profession, and I got tired of the hectic life and the requirements of journalism, and I decided to come here to live in peace and quiet. Now I'm more of an all-around freelance writer.
It would seem to be a perfect atmosphere for that kind of work.
It is if your temperament is suited for it, but not everyone can stand the silence.
I went to an art school in Zurich. I visited the art school for 2 years. I was going to go into textile design, but could not finish off because I felt it would become too boring. I didn't find it would become a job I could practice for a longer period of time.
Hans-Peter, or Ami Amacher, and his wife Ruth. How do you survive economically up here? How do you keep busy?
I guess you'd say I'm a one-man construction company. I do roofs of the houses. I did my first stone roof or slate roof this year. Most of the work I do is for the tourists that come from the German-speaking part, which makes me sad because the locals don't seem to trust somebody that comes from the German-speaking part. There's a big gap.
Would you describe this situation as almost hostility? Is that too much?
That's too much. But I had often the feeling that I'm not allowed to walk around here and to be here. It took a long time to get rid of that.
Do you have any real dialogue with the people here? Do you get involved in conversation with the locals? Or is that even possible?
Real dialogue, I think I have with one woman who is not accepted from the other locals. She is a local herself, and she is not accepted from the other ones. And this situation makes that she looks for strangers as we are to talk with. But with other people, it's not possible.
It seems that you're all individualists, but you have one problem. All of these individualists have come together. Is it difficult to get along with each other? Because you are individualists by nature, you would like to be alone.
In general, I'd say yes. We have difficulties getting along with a number of people. But there's another point. Most of the people that came here, most of the people I knew or I know that came here, came as singles or as couples without children. And the fact that there are so many children here now could form a community or could start a better communication between those individualists who are here for egotistical reasons, thanks to the children, are starting to communicate in another sense.
Al Schalk, as we've been doing this program in Endymion, we've heard the so-called alternative life seekers, or as you call them, the city refugees in this hamlet or tiny village of Endymion. And I've had the feeling myself that to a certain extent we've heard only one side of the story, and we tried to get the other side of the story, for example, from the mayor of the town, and he refused flatly. We've even had a certain amount of hostility in doing this reporting work among the, let's call it the alternative community itself. What's the problem up here? What's going on? What is the story behind the story?
Well, I think you have to understand the psychology behind the whole thing. Some of these people have had bitter experiences, and they feel their whole lifestyle threatened. They feel like strangers in their own village, because German is spoken almost as much, if not more, than Italian. And many of the city or urban refugees do not bother to learn proper Italian. There are conflicting interests. The native people, to a large extent, have lived in dire poverty in former times, and now they see the chance of prosperity. So their interests are more in the direction of tourism and prosperity. The refugees, the outsiders who come here, are looking for the exact opposite, so there's a clash of interests.
You were here before the city refugees came on the scene. How do you feel about this whole phenomenon yourself, having seen it all develop?
Well, my feeling is that the people we have here now, the alternatives we have here now, are on the whole a wonderful group with some exceptions. And I think there is a tremendous potential for a good working symbiosis. I think it will require a great deal of patience, a great deal of goodwill, and I think that some of these young people really are trying very hard to cooperate. I think the most important thing is that Indemnity must, by all means, keep its genuine character and not lose its the qualities that have made it what it is. I think that's the most important thing. At the same time, we must provide enough jobs for the people who are living here to make a living without destroying this character, because I think Indemnity is more close to Bethlehem than it is to Disneyland.
Al Schalk, American journalist and writer and long-term resident of Indemnity, thank you very much for the tour of this unique Swiss mountain village.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.